sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. As you may already know, Michael Rupert, author of the book Crossing the Rubicon, recently passed away by suicide. And his friends do say that it genuinely looked like a suicide. In 2002, he gave the speech called The CIA, Drugs, Wall Street, and the 9/11 Connection. And you'll hear the fourth part of that speech today. If you missed any of the first three parts and would like to hear them, they're archived at the website radioforall.net. Once you're on the site, search for 9/11 Wake Up Call and the shows should pop up. This show was broadcast previously, and I'm sharing it with you again today to honor Michael Rupert's life and his relentless search for the truth. So let's begin with the final part of the speech by Michael Rupert called The CIA, Drugs, Wall Street, and the 9/11 Connection.
Also, one of the big major holes of September the 11th is the issue of fighter aircraft. Now, what is available now to researchers is the FAA transcripts of exactly when it was known that the individual aircraft were hijacked. Versus when was the Air Force notified versus what was the Air Force's response. And we have a period of time of 50 minutes when it was known that four aircraft had been hijacked. Two had already crashed into the World Trade Center. So there's not much doubt about what's happening with the other two. When no fighter aircraft are scrambled to intercept. Now, the first shocking slap-in-your-face truth about this is the fact that whenever there's a hijacking, or even when an aircraft loses radio contact, goes off course suddenly, refuses to respond to a transponder request from the tower, that's where the pilot turns a little knob on the cockpit dashboard to a set frequency, pushes the button, and that lights the plane up on the radar screen. When those are not done, fighters are automatically scrambled. How do I know that? Well, everybody should remember Payne Stewart. World-famous golfer hops in a chartered Learjet in Florida in 1999. They get up to, 30, 35,000 feet. They have explosive decompression. Everybody on the plane is killed. So much for the theory about that friendly mass dropping down in your airliner, by the way. The plane goes off course, and there were U.S. Air Force fighter jets flying beside it in less than an hour. They were notified within minutes, and that was automatic. That did not require presidential approval. Was it Golf Magazine, I believe it was, had showed that it was like, 30, 40 minutes before the planes got there. But they were notified immediately. Well, if we look at the FAA logs on September the 11th, we see gaps of 10, 15 minutes before anybody's bothering to tell the Air Force that we have hijackings, and this is after two planes have hit the World Trade Center. It gets worse. It gets much worse because two fighters we know were scrambled early on from Otis Air Force Base in Massachusetts. Well, that's very strange, number one, because we know that there were fighters available in Atlantic City, much, much closer, that could have been sent. Air National Guard, hot fighters, scramble-ready fighters from much closer. But they send these two F-15 Eagles from Otis Air Force Base, and golly gee, they get to the World Trade Center just a few minutes too late. I think one of them was actually filmed in some of the footage of the second plane hitting the tower. But if you look at the logs, when the second plane has hit the tower, it's already known that the other two planes have been hijacked. They're both off course. They've both been hijacked. The FAA knows you've got two more hijackings in progress. And you've got two now airborne fighters over Manhattan with a combat radius of 1,500 miles, fully armed, in the air, that can be on the other hijacked airplanes in minutes. And what happens? They're recalled to Otis Air Force Base. Why? Government won't tell you that. Then the government says, well, when we knew that 77 had been hijacked and 93, had made its turn and was coming back, we didn't have any fighters at Andrews Air Force Base. That's a total out-and-out lie. Several researchers have archived the Andrews Air Force Base website pre-9/11, which has quotes. "We maintained scramble-ready fighters at the highest possible state of readiness." Around the country, most of the domestic air response is handled by the Air National Guard. And that doesn't mean that these guys are working at their day job. They have to get a call, drive in to work. Because Air National Guard units always maintain a ready reserve component. What's more importantly is that regular Air Force pilots rotate into National Guard units as a means of training the National Guard pilots and interfacing with them, but also to maintain the ready response capacity. Now, Andrews Air Force Base, right outside Washington, is the home of Air Force One. Do you think they don't keep any fighters there? Give me a break. I used to live outside of Andrews Air Force Base for a short time in 94, 95 when I was living in Washington. You'd see the fighters taking off all day, every day. Their website says that one of the Air National Guard squadrons had the immediate responsibility for ready response air defense protection of Washington, D.C. Are you going to tell me those fighters aren't ready? There's no fighters there, but no. What does Dick Cheney tell us? What does General Myers tell us on September the 11th? General Myers is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. "The only fighters we had available were available in Langley Air Force Base, some 130 miles south. Then you do the math and it gets even worse. From the time that they were notified until the time that they arrived at the Pentagon and the time that they took off, which is available, it shows that they flew from Langley Air Force Base to the Pentagon to get the last plane at about 530 miles an hour. They flew at subsonic speeds, less than a third of what they were capable of. Do you really think that Air Force pilots are going to fly at subsonic speeds to try and protect the White House? These are the simple tests of logic which pull 9/11 apart. There are so many more. But if I haven't got you now, you know what? I'm not going to get you. There's nothing I can say to you. If what I've told you now hasn't dislodged your brain from wrapping around your belief in Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, and the Easter Bunny, even as your pension fund is disappearing and your Social Security is gone, as criminal acts are being committed left and right. And by the way, I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. My official position is that the worst belief any American could have is, gee, we can solve all of this problem if we throw out George W. and elect Hillary. Give me a break, okay? There is systemic evil corruption. It is above the level of political parties. There's only a few brave heroes in this country that are actually speaking out. And here I refer to Cynthia McKinney of Georgia, who spoke out and asked for investigations and asked some very logical questions. I'm referring to Congressman Ron Paul of Texas, a true champion of monetary reform. He's a Republican. She's a Democrat. Barbara Lee of Northern California was the sole member of the House to vote against the War Powers Resolution. And here, as we're on the brink of a very ungodly, ill-timed, ill-conceived, stupid invasion of Iraq, which I am certain will happen in the fall, September, October, very few heroes out here, so you have to be careful. This is not about simple solutions. This is about assuming responsibility, folks. That's what it's really about. For 38 years, we've had a film showing that John Kennedy was shot from the front. What have we done about it? What have you done about it? We have made bargains with the devil over and over again, and we don't even begin to think about what it's cost us in terms of our civil liberties. And now we have to look at the Patriot Act. Now we have to look at what has happened to our civil liberties and what is going to happen to our civil liberties post 9/11. As the world is changing around us, don't ask about the New World Order when it's going to happen. It's here. It's happening right in front of your very eyes. You know, there's an old saying about how you cook a frog. You can't throw a frog into a pot of boiling water because he'll jump right out. So what you do is you throw the frog into some tepid water and he'll sit there and you turn it up a degree at a time and the frog will just sit there and let himself be cooked because he won't know what's happening. And that's exactly what's happening to you right now. Although I dare say if you've just watched your pension plan, your 401k disappear, well then by golly, maybe you're starting to see that the water's being turned up. But let's just look at some of the things that have happened since the Patriot Act was passed. And some of the things that have happened now is that any federal law enforcement agency may enter your home or business when you're not there. Collect evidence, not tell you about it, and then use that evidence to convict you of a crime. That nullifies the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And says the ACLU, it doesn't even have to be a terrorism investigation, just a criminal investigation. That's from Section 213 of the Patriot Act. It's called the sneak and peek provision. Any federal law enforcement agency may, if they suspect that you are committing a crime, monitor all of your internet traffic and read your emails. Forget about it. You know, if you have a digital cell phone, that using GPS and a program called Carnivore, they can locate you to within 3 meters anywhere on the planet just through your digital cell phone. You have no right to any expectation of privacy using any email communication or any cell phone communication, so forget about it. No warrant is required. That violates the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, and we have a story on Carnivore. The FBI or any other federal law enforcement agency, according to Title II, Section 501 of the Patriot Act, may come to your business and seize any of your business records. And they can arrest you, get this, if you tell anybody they were there. There goes your freedom of speech. That's the First Amendment. The CIA can now operate inside the U.S. and spy on American citizens. That has been a prohibition that was sacrosanct since the National Security Act was passed in 1947. But as directed on November 13th by Dear Mr. Ashcroft, it's permitted to share intelligence files with local law enforcement agencies and vice versa. Now, this is from Titles 2 and 9 of the Patriot Act, but let me tell you why that's so important. As I know, I've been there, I was a cop, I've written search warrants, I've done investigations, and there's a thing called the exclusionary rule that says that you cannot introduce into evidence anything that's obtained outside the Constitution or by illegal means. Well, we all know that the FBI and the CIA and all those guys have been wiretapping and bugging people for decades. None of that from the CIA or the FBI was ever admissible in a court of law because it was obtained illegally. Now, thanks to the Patriot Act and John Ashcroft, the FBI and the CIA can go to the LAPD, Chicago PD, NYPD, and they can say, hey, we have all this intelligence information. Dump the tapes on the guys. That then gets written up in the police report as a probable cause statement, which is just what led you to start an investigation. LAPD, for example, can receive all this wiretap. We received intelligence from the FBI or the CIA that blah, 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 blah. We went out to this place and found A, B, and C, which they already knew was going to be there, and they find that legally, then all of what they got from the FBI and the CIA now becomes admissible. There goes the exclusionary rule to the Constitution. There is no more exclusionary rule, period. Also, it works the other way now, that local law enforcement can share not only with the CIA, but with foreign intelligence services, as directed, Section 203. So now we're getting a global intelligence force. Welcome to the brave new world. So is this darkness beginning to sink over your consciousness yet about some of what we're looking at? We now have a new definition of domestic terrorism. Acts which appear to be intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population or to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion. So under this definition of domestic terrorist, you could be ruled a terrorist in staging a protest for the fact that $4.3 trillion of your money has been stolen, or there's no Social Security, or that the government is breaking laws left and right, and you block a driveway of a federal building. You could be ruled a domestic terrorist, according to the act. There are other acts which have taken place by the Bush administration outside of the Patriot Act that are very scary. One is that John Ashcroft had unilaterally decided that he was going to wiretap attorney-client conversation in terrorist cases. But that's the slippery slope. That is one of the most fundamental rights in the Fifth and the Sixth Amendments to the Constitution, the right against self-incrimination, the right to due process, where you can have conversations between attorney, client, husband, wife, priest, confessor, doctor, patient are supposed to be protected. No, they're going to wiretap. But then we had the military tribunals that could be conducted in secret. The person on trial could not even see the evidence against them, and they could be executed, even if a third of the members of the tribunal disagreed in the verdict with the defendant, not having seen the evidence, confronted witnesses, or even known what was used to convict him. How insane does it have to get? Now, people who are really wishful will say that there's a sunset clause in the Patriot Act that says it goes away after 4 years. And here's what the sunset clause actually says. It says that these provisions shall cease to have any effect as of some date in January 2005, quote, except in cases where the investigation was begun prior to that date. So there is no sunset clause because all the government has to do is to say that they started the investigation before January of 2005 and they can run it as long as they need to. And that doesn't count the financial and money laundering aspects money laundering. That's a joke. The financial loss of liberty that has occurred as a result of the Patriot Act. Title III of the Patriot Act is all about financial restraints. The Patriot Act, in terms of drastic new requirements for foreign banks that do business in the U.S., you know, has really closed a lot of those loopholes, and you can bet they're going to be used very, very selectively. Correspondent banks outside of the U.S. now must respond to subpoenas within a very short period of time. I think it's 5 working days. To respond, to disclose beneficial ownership, they have to disclose pass-through accounts. They have to really become transparent in cases where there are jurisdictional factors as decided by the Secretary of the Treasury in collaboration or collusion, I guess, with other government officials and agencies. Evidence that organized criminal groups, international terrorists have transacted business in that jurisdiction. That would apply to most of the Caribbean. The extent to which the jurisdiction or financial institutions operating in that jurisdiction offer bank secrecy or special tax or regulatory advantages. You know, that's the Caymans, Barbados, all of them. The substance and quality of the administration, blah, blah, blah. These are the means by which the Secretary, as they call it, or the FBI or FinCEN can designate certain areas as being, you have to tell us exactly how much money is moving where whenever we want you to tell it to us. But I think we know that that technology already exists. Again, what this does is open the door for prosecutions and or confiscation and or seizure. And when you combine that with what's happening to the U.S. economy, it's a very scary picture. Basically, it is limiting the right of people to move, possess, control, or use that fundamental thing which guarantees freedom, which is their own hard-earned money. The Patriot Act is extremely strict on that. And of course, we all know that there's an element of selective enforcement that's applied to all of us. It's supposed to be directed toward terrorists, but Ron Paul looked at this, and one of the comments he made after reading the whole Patriot Act was, I think it's time for a revolution. Our forefathers revolted against much milder repression. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Ron Paul. He's in a videotape which I produced called The Truth and Lies of 9/11. It's a 2.5-hour tape. They also include foreign corruption offenses now as money laundering crimes. But it's like Ron Paul said, you look at the financial aspects, and it's a great hamper to the free movement of money and currency, and it is something which is probably more likely to be turned loose on the American people than it is on foreign terrorists. And I think we're going to see that as the other economic factors start to come together. Now, before we shut down, I think there's one great context that we have to put this into to complete the map. We haven't touched on the fact that as many as 15 world-class microbiologists have died under very mysterious circumstances since September the 11th. Most have been connected to DNA sequencing and research on diseases. We have draconian new health legislation in the form of the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, or MEPA, as it's called in some states. You can find that on the website. It's now passed in 11 states. That will make it a felony to refuse a state-ordered vaccination. That will make it a felony to refuse a state-ordered medical procedure. That allows government to confiscate any personal property at any time in a declared health emergency without any recourse of any kind, without any due process. And we see the bioterror threat looming very large when it's really doubtful. I mean, there's great new evidence that Iraq doesn't have terror weapons, that the U.S. CIA is one of the only people who can make them. To really put the cap on this great exercise we've done in totally depressing your mood, guess what, folks? We are running out of oil. The world is running out of oil. World oil production will peak right about now, and it's on a bell curve, and it will never again go up. Oil is a finite supply. As oil is running out, the population is increasing, and the demand is increasing, and the economies are tied irrevocably to oil. Oil is 95% of all plastics. Look around your house. Look at everything that's within your arm's reach that's made of plastic. Look at the supermarket. Look at the chair maybe you're sitting in, your computer. Oil and gas are also fertilizers and pesticides. All fertilizers come from ammonia, and all ammonia comes from natural gas. 95% of all pesticides are petroleum-based. It is fertilizers and pesticides that enable 1 acre of land that produces 30 bushels of corn to produce 135 bushels of corn. We have already passed the peak of per capita hydrocarbon production on the planet, meaning every day that we live now, there is less hydrocarbons available on the planet per person, and it is going to continue that way. And when Dick Cheney says we're going to have a sequential war that will not end in our lifetime, that goes from Central Asia to Iraq to Colombia, where there's oil and drug money, you are witnessing a war to control the last remaining oil reserves on the planet as the wealth of the planet is being systematically moved into the hands of a totally ruthless New World Order. And I don't know how you call them. I don't know who Mr. Big is. My question in always in every case is show me how the money works. And that's why post 9/11, in spite of some very serious efforts to shut us down, hackings of our website, burglaries of our office, we've actually had microwave weapons trained on our office staff, including me. I've had my laptop stolen out of my hotel room in Sydney, Australia. We are still here, we're still strong, and we're still feeding you information as we build this map. Because nothing will so much help us to survive, those of us who are not in denial, as having a good read on how the world works and what's being done to us. And the way to stop all of this is to identify it and to disrupt whatever timetable is being played out to implement a world that somebody has designed. But I'll guarantee you one thing. You didn't have a role in saying how it was going to look, and neither did I. And until that happens, I think my task is very clear, and I think yours is too.
And that concludes the four-part speech by Michael Rupert called The CIA, Drugs, Wall Street, and the 9/11 Connection. To learn more about Michael Rupert, you can go to his website at fromthewilderness.com. He also has a newer book and movie out, both called Collapse, and that website is collapsenet.com. And now I'm going to read another article in Paul Craig Roberts' book, How America Was Lost, From 9/11 to the Police Warfare State. And the title of this article is called Conspiracy Theory, and it was written on June 20th, 2011. And here goes. In a June column, I concluded that conspiracy theory is a term applied to any fact, analysis, or truth that is politically, ideologically, or emotionally unacceptable. This column is about how common real conspiracies are. While every happening cannot be explained by a conspiracy, conspiracies are common everyday events. Therefore, it is paradoxical that, quote, conspiracy theory, unquote, has become a synonym for unbelievable. Conspiracies are commonly used in order to advance agendas. In the July issue of American Rifleman, a National Rifle Association publication, the organization's executive vice president, Wayne LaPierre, reports on a congressional investigation led by Senator Charles Grassley and Representative Daryl Issa of a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives and Department of Justice conspiracy to further gun control measures by smuggling guns across the border to Mexican criminals and blame it on American firearm sellers. LaPierre writes, thanks to federal agents coming forth with evidence on the gun smuggling operation, this government-sanctioned criminal conspiracy has been exposed, leading an administration-wide cover-up marked by an arrogant dismissal of Congress's constitutional role is attorney Eric Holder, who has blocked all efforts to get to the truth. His minions have directed federal employees with knowledge of the gun-running scam to refuse to cooperate with congressional investigators. Many Americans will find this uncovered conspiracy hard to believe. The U.S. federal agency, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and the Department of Justice's participation has been providing firearms to Mexico's drug cartels in order to create, quote, evidence to support the charge that U.S. gun dealers are the source of weapons for Mexican drug gangs. The purpose of the government's conspiracy is to advance the gun control agenda. Attorney General Eric Holder's stonewalling of the congressional investigation has resulted in Representative Issa's warning to Holder, quote, we're not looking for the straw buyers, Mr. Attorney General. We're looking at you, unquote. The most likely outcome will be that Grassley and Issa will have accidents or be framed on sex charges. Conspiracies are also a huge part of economic life. For example, the Wall Street firm, Goldman Sachs, is known to have shorted financial instruments that it was simultaneously selling as sound investments to its customers. The current bailouts of EU countries' sovereign debt is a conspiracy to privatize the public domain. Economic conspiracies are endless, and most succeed. NAFTA is a conspiracy against American labor, as are H-1B and L-1 work visas. Globalization is a conspiracy against first world jobs. The sex charge against Dominique Strauss-Kahn could turn out to have been a conspiracy. According to the New York Times, The hotel maid has bank accounts in four states, and someone has been putting thousands of dollars into them. Sometimes governments are willing to kill large numbers of their own citizens in order to advance an agenda. For example, Operation Northwoods was a plan for false flag terrorist events drafted by the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff and signed by General Lyman Lemnitzer. It called for the CIA and other black op elements to shoot down Americans in the streets of Miami and Washington, D.C., to hijack or shoot down airliners, to attack and sink boats carrying Cuban refugees to the U.S., and to fabricate evidence that implicated Castro. The agenda of the Joint Chiefs and the CIA was to stir up American fear and hatred for Castro in order to support regime change in Cuba. Before the knee-jerk reader cries, quote, conspiracy theory, unquote, be apprised that the secret Operation Northwoods was made public on November 18, 1997, by the John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Review Board. When the plan was presented to President Kennedy in 1962, he rejected it and removed Lemnitzer as chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Wikipedia quotes extensively from the plan's menu of proposed false flag terrorist acts. Those who distrust Wikipedia can obtain a copy of the plan from the National Archives. When I tell even highly educated people about Operation Northwoods, they react with disbelief, which goes to show that even U.S. government-acknowledged conspiracies remain protected by public disbelief a half century after they were hatched and 14 years after being revealed by the government. An example of a conspiracy that is proven, but not officially acknowledged, is Israel's attack on the USS Liberty in 1967. Captain Ward Boston, one of the two U.S. Navy legal officers ordered to cover up the attack, revealed the Johnson administration's conspiracy and that of every subsequent administration to blame mistaken identity for what was an intentional attack. The unofficial Maurer Commission, led by Admiral Tom Maurer, former Chief of Naval Operations and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, proved conclusively that the Israeli attack, which inflicted massive casualties on U.S. servicemen, was an intentional attack. Yet the U.S. government will not acknowledge it, and few Americans even know about it. Even the event Americans celebrate on July 4th was a conspiracy and was regarded as such by the British government and American colonials who remained loyal to King George. If we don't believe in conspiracies, why do we celebrate one on July 4th? And again, that was an article from Paul Craig Roberts' latest book called How America Was Lost from 9/11 to the Police Warfare State. The article was called Conspiracy Theory. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.